Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Bet, Chapter 2. Perek Bet is the first nevuah that Yirmiyahu gives directly to the people. Perek Aleph, Yirmiyahu's initiation, is a private nevuah given just to Yirmiyahu. Just to review, in Perek Aleph, Hashem tells Yirmiyahu that he was chosen in the womb to be a prophet for the people. Yirmiyahu does not want the job, claiming that he cannot speak and is just a child, but Hashem reassures him that he will help him. Hashem then tells Yirmiyahu that his job is to be a prophet of destruction and that the way forward will not be easy or smooth. Before we get into the meat of Chapter 2, it is important to note the historical background. While it's not stated outright, it seems clear that this perek is said during the reign of King Yoshio. While nevuot can certainly have relevance outside of their historical context, understanding the world in which the Nevi lived enhances the depth and poignancy of the message. King Yoshio was born into a world of turmoil. Yoshio's grandfather, Menashe, was the son of King Chizkiyo and his exact opposite. Whereas Chizkiyo went on a campaign to ban idolatry and bring people closer to Hashem, Menashe went on a campaign to expunge God's name from his country, bring idols into his land, and kill any political or religious opponent. According to Sefer Melachim chapter 21, Menashe's reign of terror lasted for 55 years, enough to thoroughly affect an entire generation and school them in the ways of idolatry. Divrei Hayamim presents a slightly different version of Menashe's kingship, but that's for another time. After Menashe's death, Yoshio's father Amon was overthrown in a coup, and Yoshio took over at the tender age of 8, knowing nothing of Hashem or the Torah. At some point, Yoshio decides to clean up the Beit HaMikdash and makes a startling discovery, a forgotten Torah scroll hidden deep in the vault of the temple. When Yoshio hears what was written in the scroll, he decides to completely change his ways and embarks on a religious revolution to get rid of the idolatry from the land and turn a wayward people back to their creator. Yoshio understands that the people may be reluctant to change their ways so quickly, so he gathers them together and asks them to make a covenant with him and promise that they will follow the Torah, which they do. And according to the Midrash, he also sends armed soldiers into their houses to make sure that he is not only ridding the country of public idolatry, but even the private ones that they kept in their homes. The Midrash notes that not all the people were on board with Yoshio's grand plans, and some people would hide their idols behind their doors, so that when the soldiers came in to check, the idols would be hidden between the back of the door and the wall. It is in this environment that Yirmiyahu enters the scene. Yirmiyahu and Yoshio are partners in a mission to bring a people closer to God and rid the land of the rampant idolatry. Unlike Yoshio, though, Yirmiyahu is not fooled by the people who hide their idolatry, and he calls them out not only for their worship, but for lying about it as well. Yirmiyahu begins his prophecy with tender words of reconciliation between God and his beloved people. Zacharti la chesed nu'rayich, Yirmiyahu begins in verse 2. I remember the kindness of your youth, ahavat klulotayich, the love you had for me when you were a bride. Lechtech acharai b'midbar, be'eretz lo zru'ah. You followed me with loyalty through a desert, relying on me for food in a land that was desolate and unplanted. He continues in verse 3 to establish the love that Hashem feels for Bnei Yisrael. Kodesh Yisrael la Hashem, reshit tfuatah. Kol ochlav ye'ashamu ra'a tavo aleihem ne'um Adonai. Israel is holy to Hashem, the first fruits of his harvest. All who eat of it are held guilty. Disaster will befall them, declares the Lord. The introduction presents us with two images that will be considered and developed throughout this parak. One is the image of the loyal bride following her beloved through danger and into the abyss, only because of her abiding love. This represents the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael as spouses, referencing their marriage at Matan Torah, at the giving of the Luchot of the Ten Commandments. It is supposed to be a passionate relationship with both sides feel privileged to be a part of. The second image is that of a plant, the first seedling that the farmer planted, and it sprouted into a wonderful nourishing fruit. Both of these images portray how Hashem feels about Bnei Yisrael. The plant imagery highlights Hashem's role as a parent, one who plants the seed, cultivates it, and feels pride as it grows and reaches its potential. And the bride imagery represents how Hashem feels about Bnei Yisrael as a spouse. The rest of the parak then lambasts Bnei Yisrael for treating God the way they have, for taking these special relationships with Hashem and throwing them away for cheap thrills and momentary passions. The tone of the next group of psukim is one of sadness and longing, as Hashem sees his beloved people disposing of their destiny. Ko amar Hashem, so says God, laments Yirmiyahu in verse 5. Mama tu avotecham bi avel ki rachakume alai, vilchu achorei hevel vaybalu. What deficit did your fathers find in me that they distanced themselves from me? And they went after nothingness, referencing their idolatry, and they became nothing themselves. Verse 6 continues, V'lo amru ayei Hashem ha-ma'ale otanu me'eretz Mitzrayim, ha-molich otanu b'mibar, be'eretz arava v'sucha, be'eretz tziyah v'tzalmavet, be'eretz lo avar ba'ish, v'lo yashav adam sham. They don't even say anymore, where is Hashem? The one who took us out of Mitzrayim, who led us through the wilderness, a land of deserts and pits, a land of drought and darkness, a land no man has traversed, where no human being has dwelt. In the desert, when Bnei Yisrael relied on Hashem for everything, they were loyal and really loved him. Once they got into Eretz Yisrael and were able to plant their own food and didn't need Hashem to provide it for them miraculously, they didn't recognize the hand of Hashem anymore. They forgot all about him, and in the process, lost the sense of themselves as a nation that made them special to begin with. Yirmiyahu rebukes the people further in verse 11. Hahamir goy Elohim? Does any nation just change its God? Yirmiyahu asked with incredulity. V'hem lo Elohim, they're not even real gods. Va'ami himir kvodo b'lo yo'il. My nation has exchanged its honor and its glory for something worthless that does not even help. You can hear God's voice of pain in these psukim, looking at his nation that he so carefully cultivated as a seed, that he felt so close to as they wandered together through the desert, and now they have deserted him, but not even for something equal to God, for an illusion, for a mirage. It's not even real. It's almost like Bnei Yisrael are characters in a Tennessee Williams play, wandering aimlessly following illusions while in reality rejecting the one real thing that they had in their lives. In verse 13, Yirmiyahu gives the reader a window into the mind of the nation and what was so attractive to them about idolatry in the first place. Kishtaim ra'ot asa ami, oti azavu makor mayim chayim, lachtzov lahem ba'orot, ba'orot nishbarim, asher lo yachlu hamayim. For my nation has done two wrong things. They have forsaken me, the source of living water, in favor of digging their own cisterns, but they were broken cisterns, which cannot even hold water. Cisterns are large underground containers sealed with cement that collect water in the rainy season so that the owner can sustain his or herself with its water during the dry season. If you travel to Beit Guvrin in Israel, you can actually see ancient caves where the entire basement of the houses, complete with a staircase, was actually a large cistern to hold water for the family once the rain stops around Pesach time. Bnei Yisrael thought of idolatry like a cistern. The water in a cistern is nowhere near as good as the water from a flowing spring, but it's scary to rely on a flowing water. It's wild and unpredictable. Maybe it will dry up. Maybe it won't be there for you. At least a cistern you can own. You can have it in your basement. You know it's there. That's one mistake, says Yirmiyahu. Hashem is the source of flowing water. If you think he could ever not be there, you're wrong. He'll never dry up. But it is true that you don't control him the way you control a cistern. He makes demands on you. You have to be a good person. You have to be kind. You have to serve him. Idolatry doesn't really make any demands other than specific rituals that are physical and often have to do with sacrifices and food. There are no ethics in an idolatrous world. The gods demand their rituals and nothing else. They do not desire your heart or your thoughts. They do not desire kindness or charity, only meat and cultic practice. This life seems to the people easier and more dependable. Yirmiyahu forces them to think through the lifestyle that they are choosing. The second mistake is about the cistern itself. Imagine if you dug a large cistern, enough to hold water for your family for the whole dry season. True, the water will be stale by September, but at least you know you have it. At least you know you can drink it. You won't die of thirst. Then, your water dries up, and you go to your cistern expecting it to be full. And you see that the cement that you so carefully laid on your cistern to hold the water was cracked, and the cistern leaked out all the precious water, and you are left with nothing. This is the second mistake of idolatry, says Yirmiyahu. It's not an inferior system, Tashem. It's not a system at all. It's an illusion. It's not real. And if you depend on your idolatrous gods to send you rain, to give you fertility, or to save you from your enemies, you are living in a fool's paradise because the system itself was made up. Yirmiyahu tells them this later in the parak. When bad things happen, try calling out to the gods that you created for yourself. Let's see if they can save you when your back is against the wall. We then come to the two main images that Yirmiyahu presented in the beginning of the parak, the bride and the plant. But this time the images are corrupted and they are presented as the opposite. In verse 20, Yirmiyahu says, Ki mi'olam shavarti ulich, natakti mosrotayich, vatomri lo avor. I've always broken your yoke and burst your bands. I've always taken care of you in times of hardship. And you said, I will never transgress against you. But look, upon every high hill, under every tree, you're acting like a prostitute. The loving bride that we met in the beginning of the parak is no more. Instead, now she is a prostitute, selling herself to anyone who comes her way. Not only this, but she lies to Hashem, telling him, I'll never transgress, I'll never leave you, and yet is rejecting him through her actions everywhere she can. Note Yirmiyahu's emphasis on the lies that the people are telling about their idol worship. This backs up the Midrashic narrative of people hiding their idols from Yoshiyahu. The bride has become a prostitute, and it seems as though the spousal relationship that took so long to cultivate and meant so much is in ruins. Verse 21 does the same reversal for the plant. Vanochi nitaticha sorek. I planted you as a pure plant, cries out Hashem. Kula zera emet, a holy righteous seed. Ve'ech nefachli sureya gefen achuya. How can it be that you turned into a terrible vine that I don't even recognize? The caring farmer, verse 3, who so lovingly tended the seed and took pride in the fruit that the plant produced, is now confronted with a base and degenerate, and one that he does not recognize. Through their incessant idol worship, Bnei Yisrael seem bent on ruining their dual relationship with Hashem. They do not appreciate what he has done for them and how he has taken care of them as a parent, and they do not love him and are not loyal to him as a spouse. God's voice in this parak is racked with pain as he sees his nation throw away the most important relationship of their existence for illusionary comfort, following after nothingness and slowly becoming nothing themselves. Thank you for studying L'Iloy Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.